can former inmates and nuns come together to help one another? Join us for day two of our society article. Hello friends, welcome to Advanced Video Classroom. Thank you for coming back to join us for day two of our society article for the month of July. Our article is on page 24. We are studying this article and the title is A Home for Former Inmates. And in the studio, I have Gordon and Lois with me once again. Thanks for coming back today, guys.
Thanks, Campbell. Great to be here. Great to be able to join this program once again.
Yeah, and I'm happy to be here. I hope our listeners are enjoying our society article this month.
That's right. So we have been talking about this home called the Journey House, and today is day two of this article. But before we get into day two, let's review a little bit of what we talked about yesterday. So we found out yesterday about this home called the Journey House, and it is run by nuns, right? Some sisters of this Catholic religious order, St. Joseph of Carondelet. And these nuns work with a special group of women.
Right. They work with women who were former inmates of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're a bit of a rough crowd for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But we also learn that our nuns aren't perfect either.
That's right. So we learned that these former inmates had a difficult life, right, Gordon?
Yeah, we certainly did. We spoke a lot yesterday about the past of these women being dark, and we had some troubling times. We don't know all the details of each individual, but they certainly lived in a violent situations. And this house is giving them a fresh start, a new perspective, and the nuns are doing a great job working with them.
That's right. So this house that we're talking about is, once again, it's in the Beacon Hill area of Kansas City, and these women are going there and they're getting a new start. But at the same time, the nuns that live in this house and are working with these women are finding a new purpose.
Right. And it's great because they're involved with these women. It sounds like they're also, because of where the house is situated in Kansas City, Missouri, that they're also involved in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like it's a bit of a life that both the nuns can enjoy, the inmates can enjoy, and perhaps even the whole neighborhood.
Right. And we have a beautiful sidebar at the top of page 25 that kind of describes this, right? Can you read that for us, Lois?
For sure. A beautiful bond. The sisters quote scripture. The women speak something else. But these two groups have come together, an embrace of one's need for help and the other's will to give it. That goes both ways.
Right. So it's a unique situation here. Both sides are helping one another, and I think it's a really great situation that they have. Well, let's continue our article on page 25. If you've got your magazine or your mobile device, please do open up to the article. We are going to be starting at the top of page 25.
The women from prison say the place is the closest thing to a home they've had in years. "I don't really have family. Not anymore," said Sandy Lytle, 48. "The sisters are my family now. I will never be able to repay them for what they've done for me. Like everyone here, I've done drugs and I've done crime, and I know God is working through them to get to us. Sometimes we have to lift each other up," Walker said. "But there's not a day I regret coming here."
So we find out that this is a very special place for these former inmates. How do these women from prison describe this place?
Well, they describe it like a home, which is in our title, and perhaps even like a family.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they say that this place is the closest thing to a home they've had in mm-hmm. years. What does mm-hmm. that mean?
Well, they haven't had. We often say that home is where your heart is, or home is where you hang your hat, or
right.
whatever.
Right.
They just haven't had that feeling of warmth and welcoming spirit mm-hmm. where they've been, and now they have it here mm-hmm. Here in Beacon Hill in Journey House. They have that experience that they want to feel together and in a family.
Right, yeah. They describe it as the closest thing to a home because in a way it's not their permanent home
right.
yet. So it's close to a home. It feels like a home, but this is again a transitional place. So usually they move out of this place into a more permanent place. But it is the closest thing they've had in a long time. They were in prison, and I don't think anybody could ever say that prison was home to them. It's not a place they feel warm and friendly. I've never been to prison, so I wouldn't know. Maybe some people feel comfortable there.
Just visited prisons for ministry myself, mission ministry, and I would, a number of times now, I would certainly not describe it as homey or feeling like home.
Right. Well, we hear from one of these former inmates, Sandy Lytle, and she's 48. And what does she say, Gordon?
Well, she says that the sisters are her family. For this period when she's in this home with the sisters and the former inmates.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that she'll never be able to repay the nuns for what they've done. And what that means is that the nuns have helped her and reached out to her, and she knows that she's not going to be able to give that back, but she is extremely grateful.
Right, yeah. So we might say she owes them a debt of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Yeah, when Sandy was sharing this and about her age, she's 48 and that, I have to tell you, I had to hold back the tears a bit because I just kept thinking, what was her life like when she was 4? Or what was her life like when she was 8?
Mm-hmm.
And what got her to this place that she had to be an inmate
mm-hmm.
and now this transitioning period. And I'm just so happy she has a safe landing here.
That's right. Yeah. They've definitely had a difficult life. She says, like everyone there, she's done drugs and she's done crime. But she knows that God is working through the nuns to get to them.
Right, right.
So I think that's really special. She knows that God is trying to show them his love, trying to talk to them through the nuns. And I think that is really, really special because I think a lot of times when you've experienced some of the things that these former inmates have experienced, it can be hard to see light and to see hope and to see love.
Right. It's kind of funny, Campbell and I are both struggling a bit with saying nurses or nuns, mm-hmm. and I think it's because we think of a nurse of looking after our body injuries,
right.
okay?
Yes.
And here we think of the nuns looking after the heart injuries.
That's right.
And I think that's why we keep kind of going back and forth, and these nurses are just being so loving and gracious. And
you just did it again.
I did. Yeah. I did. These nuns are being so loving and gracious. And they have a heart of a nurse as well, I
That's
guess.
That's right.
Right?
Yes. So thank you for that. It's true. These women are, in a way, nursing mm-hmm. these former inmates back into society and healing their hearts. And we hear again from Georgia Walker, and she says, sometimes we have to lift each other up, and that just means to encourage one another,
mm-hmm.
because this transition is not always easy. But she says something interesting. She says, there's not a day she regrets coming here.
Mm, that's great.
Yeah, that's an interesting phrase there. There's not a day I something, right? And it just means she never regrets going there. She always enjoys her time at the home.
Yeah, every day she is happy that she is there doing the work to help these women.
Yes. All right, so how did this Journey House come into existence? Let's take a look at the next section of our article.
How Journey House came into existence. The Society of St. Pius X was looking for a buyer for a building that had been used for priest training. The Society pitched the building to Operation Breakthrough, a large urban child care provider. Breakthrough director Sister Berta Saylor declined, but said she knew someone who might be interested. Saylor is on the board for Journey to New Life. The nonprofit was set up 2 years ago to help people leaving prison make the transition back into society. Housing had been a constant challenge. Walker first floated the idea of opening a home for women, and McClarney, chairwoman of the Journey Board, told her she was crazy.
So now we get to take a look at the history of this Journey House and how it came to be. So we hear about the Society of St. Pius X, and they were looking for a buyer for a building that had been used for priest training.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting. So they had this building they didn't know what to do with. And so this society pitched the building to Operation Breakthrough. What does it mean to pitch the building? I mean, I know to pitch a ball means to throw, but I don't think it means that they threw the building.
No, it doesn't. And I'm glad you used that baseball analogy there, Campbell. You know, that always makes me happy. It says pitch it to try to persuade someone to do something.
Right.
So you're giving this idea, you're putting it forth, and you want somebody to run with it.
Right. So we often might have to give pitches or pitch something at work.
Right.
You might have an idea that you want your boss to approve, so you need to pitch that idea. So this society pitched the idea of this building, so they talked to this Operation Breakthrough and asked them if they would like to buy it. And what is Operation Breakthrough?
Yeah, Operation Breakthrough is another charitable organization that is mentioned in this article. And a number of religious and charities are mentioned in this article. And this particular organization that didn't end up buying the building are a large urban child care provider.
Mm-hmm. So they take care of children, right? And they work. Their work is primarily in taking care of children, of people in these city areas, okay? And of course, naturally, you know, if you've got these children, you need a place to take care of them, mm-hmm. right? So it makes sense that the society would pitch the idea of buying this building over to this Operation Breakthrough. But did Operation Breakthrough accept the pitch?
Well, it says that Breakthrough director Sister Berta Saylor declined, but said she knew someone who might be interested. And that someone, Saylor, is on the board of Journey to New Life. So obviously Journey of New Life is part of Journey House.
That's right. So we found out yesterday that Journey to New Life is the organization that opened this Journey House. And Sister Berta Saylor is on the board for Journey to New Life. So she brought up the idea of this building to this organization. Now we find out a little bit more about this Journey to New Life. The nonprofit was set up when?
Well, it was set up 2 years ago, and it was set up to help people leaving prison to make a transition back into normal society.
Mm-hmm. So we've been using this word actually over the past 2 days, the idea of transitioning. Mm-hmm. So this period of time between prison and going back into society. Now, what is a nonprofit? We use this word nonprofit to describe Journey to New Life. What is a nonprofit?
Well, nonprofit is also not for profit.
Mm-hmm.
So it means you do not make money for, let's say, your investors or shareholders or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's covering your costs.
Right.
You set a budget, You hope to your target budget, you hope to meet it. You raise it either by donations, fundraisers, whatever, mm-hmm. but you don't have money left over that is the profit that's going, the pot now is going to be shared. That doesn't happen.
That's right. So they're businesses in some way, right?
Right.
They are businesses, but they're not there to make money.
Right, because they want to keep their charitable status. This organization would want its charitable status mm-hmm. to continue, because that probably means they don't pay property taxes, because it's connected with the Roman Catholic Church
right.
in that state.
Right. So we think of organizations and charities and churches and things mm-hmm. like that as nonprofit. So this nonprofit was set up 2 years ago to help people leaving prison to make the transition back into society. Now, this organization, this nonprofit, Journey to New Life, they take care of men and women. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so that's something to note. They take care of men and women, but this house, Journey House, at this point only serves women. One of the biggest challenges or biggest problems that Journey to New Life has faced is housing, right? So finding a place for these people to stay while they transition back into society. So Walker, Georgia Walker, the former nun we talked about yesterday, first floated the idea of opening a home for women. And McLarney, who is the sister we first met yesterday, McLarney, who is the chairwoman of the Journey Board, told her she was crazy.
This is quite amusing, but you can see why this has come about. This small non-profit organization has women coming out of prison and men coming out of prison, and their immediate problem is trying to house them because they've got nowhere to live.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a non-profit, they don't have lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly to have the idea of, hey, let's create a home where we can, like, house people ourselves,
mm-hmm.
that's just like, whoa, do we have the money for this? Mm-hmm. Do we have the abilities to look after, like, a big group of women who have come out of prison?
Right, yeah. I mean, you have to think about it this way, right? People who come out of prison, they don't have any kind of income, so mm-hmm. they're not going to be able to rent a house or find any kind of housing. And B, a lot of landlords will be hesitant to
right.
rent their property to former inmates. What if they run off? What if they don't pay their rent?
Right.
What if they cause damage to the property? Things like that. So they need a place for these former inmates to stay. But where? And how, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can't
mm-hmm.
afford, they're a non-profit, and usually non-profit, they don't have any extra income mm-hmm. to buy property and to buy houses. So Sister McLarney thought that Georgia Walker was crazy. But then she changed her mind. So let's finish today's article on the right-hand column of page 25.
Then McLarney and the others got on board, and people said they were all crazy. The whole thing appeared moot because Journey didn't have money to buy the building anyway. But then a donor, who wanted to remain anonymous, wrote a check for $347,000 to buy the place. Journey could never have done this on our own, McLarney said. After remodeling and furnishing, with virtually everything donated, including labor by 75 volunteers, Journey House opened in September 2015. The home now has a waiting list after quickly filling to its zoning limit of 15 women.
So as I said earlier, Sister McLarney, she changed her mind, and she got the other nuns, on board. What does it mean when you get someone on board?
This is an idiom or a saying we use a lot. To get someone on board is to get them on your side, to get them agreeing to the idea or the proposition.
Yeah, so the nuns all got on board. They agreed this was a good idea. They wanted to do this, but most other people thought what?
Well, most other people thought they were all crazy.
Yeah, that they were all crazy. And the whole thing appeared moot, right? Because Journey didn't have money to buy the building anyway. What does it mean? I love this phrase when it says that something is kind of, something appears moot or something is moot. I love this word moot. What does it mean when something is moot?
Well, it's not practical. It's irrelevant. It's not going to happen. Why are we even talking about this?
Right.
It's never going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like like you said, it's irrelevant. There's no point to even discussing this because why? They don't have the money to buy the building anyway. So why are we even discussing the idea of buying this house? There's no point.
Something that is moot. It's a secondary problem, say, or a secondary issue that is only relevant if a primary, if a first issue is resolved.
Is met, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have the money to buy the building anyway, so they don't even need to discuss the idea of having this building or this
house. We'll often say, that issue isn't even on the floor. Why are we talking about it?
Right, yeah. But it kind of quickly became... not moot.
Right. Well, and you know what I found interesting when I was reading this article and preparing for our radio program? I love that the check was $347,000.
Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking, why isn't it $340,000, $345,000, or $350,000?
Right. Yeah.
No, the amount is $347,000.
Right. And I'm guessing that's probably the cost of what it costs to buy the building.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's fabulous that the person wanted to remain anonymous.
Yes, yes. I actually would love to do this one day.
Oh.
I would love to be able to just say, what, you need $400,000? Let me write you a check.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that is such a huge blessing.
Yeah. You know, my husband and I went through a hard time for a while, and it was through unemployment and that sort of thing. And it was right near Christmas time. And somebody did the 12 days of Christmas to our house.
Mm.
And our kids were young then, maybe 10 and 13 or 11 and 14. To this day, I don't know who did it.
Mm.
Every morning, something showed up at our house that would make our Christmas better.
Wow.
And you know, I have shared that story so many times in Asia, and it has just moved people so many times. It's happened back where we lived in the Vancouver area of Canada. And you know, wow.
Yeah.
It'll never leave my husband and I. It will never leave our children.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to encourage all of our listeners, you know, you don't actually have to have money to do things to help people. We can all make a difference in this world. And if you do have the financial ability to help others, please do. Please do. I think we can all make a difference in this world. And we don't know who this person was that donated this large amount of money. They were anonymous, which just means they didn't give their name.
Right.
But it made a difference, and it's making an impact.
Right. And you know, Campbell's right here. Even if you can only give 30 or 300, you know, it can make such a difference to people.
Right.
And I tell you, you feel really blessed doing it.
Right.
And the beautiful thing about doing this kind of charity anonymously is it means it isn't about the giver. It's about the person receiving it. So in Lois's example there, the story, whenever anyone hears it, is of a family in need, in difficult times, who were treated during a difficult period, rather than the story being about this generous person who did something.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's kind of fun, you know,
it
doing
is.
Kind of like the sneaky kind of...
It is. And, you know, then you also put the person not, like I think Gordon's saying here, under no obligation. I don't know to this day who did it, but it makes me want to do things for others. And since that period of time, I certainly have been able to anonymously as well.
Right, yeah. We call it pay it forward, right? Oftentimes we use the phrase to pay someone back, right? If someone does something nice, you pay them back.
Yeah.
But we often also talk about paying it forward. So rather than doing something nice back towards the person who helped you, you go and help someone else.
Yeah. You know, I've had it happen to me in restaurants, too, with family members. Or one time I can remember with my parents who are elderly now, somebody paid for our meal.
Right.
I go to pay the meal, and it's paid for.
Yeah.
Just incredible. I have no idea to this day. I think it was a total stranger.
Yeah. Yeah. I often hear stories of people who, you know, they go through a drive-thru, right? And then they'll pay for the meal of the person behind them in the drive-thru.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things like that. You know, we can all do little things to brighten up people's days, and it doesn't have to be a huge thing.
Right.
You know? So let's just keep our eyes open and be aware of different needs and different ways that we can bless others. Now, we hear again from Sister McLarney, and she says that Journey could have never done this on their own. Without this help, there's no way they would have ever been able to have this home. And so they spent some time remodeling and furnishing, and the house was opened in September 2015. Now, this remodeling and furnishing, usually when you think of remodeling and furnishing a house, you think it takes a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
right? But they had a lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. Everything was donated, including labor, which means the work needed. So people volunteered time mm-hmm. to come and paint or to come and install furniture. And a lot of people clearly helped out to make this house possible.
That's right. And everyone came together, the community came together to make this place available. And now this home has a waiting list,
mm-hmm.
right? So there are people who are waiting to get into this house after quickly filling to its zoning limit of 15 women.
Right. Do you think that 15 women zoning limit has to include the sisters, or is it for the inmates as well? Do you have any idea?
I think, if we go back to the day one of our article, it says that the nuns share a home with 15 younger women.
Okay.
So I think the 15 are referring to just the women, and then the nuns are not included.
Right, because they're permanent residents, right?
Right, right, yes.
And you can see in the picture at the top right, there's a lot of women crowded in one room there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a really great organization, and they're helping a lot of people. And we're going to learn more about what they do tomorrow for the last day of our article. So please be sure to come back and join us for day 3. For now, we'll say goodbye and take care, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.